welcome to Speaking with Joy, a podcast about books, beauty, and music. So make yourself a cup of tea, sit down, and let's begin. Before I was humbled, I was like a stone in a deep mire. But he that is mighty came and in his mercy raised me up, and indeed lifted me high up and placed me on the top of the wall. And from there I ought to shout out in gratitude to the Lord for his great favors in this world and forever, that the mind of man cannot measure. Well, hello everyone, and happy St. Patrick's Day. I thought that I would record a special episode just to kind of give you some background on the story of St. Patrick and to give you some ideas to celebrate. I wasn't planning on doing this episode, but I was just sitting in my room listening to my St. Patrick's Day playlist, wishing that more people knew the depth and richness and delight of St. Patrick's Day, and I thought, well, of course, I should make a podcast about it. Now, when most of us think of St. Patrick's Day, we think of parades, a great deal of drinking, and those Kiss Me If You're Irish t-shirts. But what might come as a surprise to many people is that St. Patrick was actually English. So let's get into a little bit of the history of the actual person of St. Patrick. Now, St. Patrick was born around 385 in Roman England. So at this point, the Roman Empire extended all the way up into the British Isles, and so he was a Roman citizen, but also a Brit. Now, that's been contested. It's said that he was either in Scotland or Wales, but generally speaking, he was somewhere in the British Isles and was a part of the Roman Empire. Though it was early in Christianity's history, Patrick came from a line of Christians. So his father was an honored deacon in the town where he lived, in this English village on the side of the sea, and his grandfather was a priest. Now, that may perk your historical ears, because most of the time when we think of Roman Catholic priests, we don't think of them as being married. But there was a long period of time in the early church where priests were married and had families, and it wasn't a big deal at all. And actually, as a fun aside, that is where my last name comes from. So my name is Joy Clarkson, and Clarkson comes from the Scots for cleric's son, which was either a reference to a clerk, who was like a scribe, or a cleric, which was a priest. And that's also true of my tribe, which is MacPherson, which is the son of the parson. So there was a long period at which priests could get married in the Catholic Church. So just a little fun fact for you. So Patrick was the son of these kind of righteous people, but he was rebellious. At great length in the Confessions, he doesn't really describe what he did, but he describes that he was generally rebellious, not a believer, and did many things that he actually came back to him later in life when he was a bishop. And there's kind of some controversy over what this was, but he was kind of taken to task for his life when he was young. So he was not very into the faith. Now, when he was 16 years old, a group of Irish pirates raided his town or village, or whatever you'd like to call it, and kidnapped him and took him away as a slave. So for 6 years, Patrick was a slave in Ireland. He was basically a sheep farmer, and he spent all of his days by himself in the wilderness watching these sheep. Now, in that time, and all the time by himself, he began to kind of think about his life, and he began to pray because he was lonely, and he was, you know, stuck in the middle of this beautiful but barren place. And in that foreign land, without much support from other Christians, or without any support from other Christians, he eventually came to a faith in God. And it's really interesting because when you read his confessions, he talks about kind of the way that he connects God speaking to him with the beauty of the landscape around him, and that he would pray every morning. And there's this lovely quote where he says, "I would wake up before daylight to pray in the snow, in icy coldness and rain, because as I now see it, the Spirit was burning in me at that time." And there was this kind of sense with St. Patrick that even though he had done as much as he could to reject the faith of his parents, that God watched over him and wanted to bring him into the fold. And there's this quote where he says, "And God watched over me before I knew him, before I learned even to distinguish between good and evil. But in the fields at this time, he began to pray and kind of have this relationship with God." Now, after 6 years having been there, he heard a voice in a vision saying to him to flee. So he fled from his master, he just ran away, and walked a distance of 200 miles, which took a good long time, to a port where there was a ship leaving. In the vision, they had said that there was a ship that he could get on and go back to England. And he found the ship, but then it actually took some convincing to get the shipmaster to let him on. But eventually he did, and he made it back to England. But even after he made it back to England, he had this long journey in which all the people that he was with, they almost starved. But finally, he made it back to England and to his family, and they were very excited. So then he ended up going to the mainland of Europe, where he began to study Christianity, having kind of had this newfound faith. And he became a priest. And a few years after returning and beginning to study Christianity, he had this dream. And I'm going to read you the excerpt from his confessions where he talks about the dream. "I saw a man coming, as it were, from Ireland. His name was Victoricus, and he carried many letters, and he gave me one of them. I read the heading, The Voice of the Irish. As I began the letter, I imagined in that moment that I heard the voice of those very people who were near the wood of Fuclut, which is beside the Western Sea. And they cried out as with one voice, saying, We appeal to you, holy servant boy, to come and walk among us." So he received this dream early in his career as a priest, but it always stuck with him, and he kind of knew that he was called back to Ireland. But of course, that wasn't a small calling, because Ireland was the place that he had been kidnapped and sold into slavery in. But finally, he followed that call and went back to Ireland, became a bishop, and spent his life investing in the church there, baptizing people and planting the church. Now, many stories and ideas and kind of legends come out of the life of St. Patrick, but basically all that we know from his own self-reporting in the two, there's two documents that we kind of are fairly certain were attributed to him. And the story that I just told you is what we know of St. Patrick, of what he reported of his own life. But then there's many other kind of fantastic and strange and mythical stories about him casting out all the snakes in Ireland, or you know, explaining to people the Trinity through the shamrock. But what we know of Patrick is the story that he told in the Confessions and in this letter called, to Corticus, I believe. I can't remember what it's called, but it's a letter to Corticus and his soldiers. Now, the reason that he actually wrote both of these is that in his bishopric, he was accused of something. Nobody really knows exactly what it was. But he was accused, and some people think it was of kind of the sins of his youth, that he had done some pretty stupid things when he was a young teenager. And they were like, well, how can a man who has done, you know, these wicked things be able to be the bishop to Ireland? And maybe he's self-serving, all these things. So he wrote the confession as this kind of telling of a story of God's grace in his life. And it's beautiful because it's actually very self-effacing, and not in a false humility way. You know, we think back to our podcast a couple weeks ago about humility being able to be something that's not false, that's not performative, but just in, he was a simple man. And it's funny because even the language of the confession is very simple. And that's because he spent his most formative years, when he would have been getting an education, being a sheep farmer, being a slave. And so he really was not that well read and was not that educated in Latin. And so, as my friend Bose points out, there's this quote where he says, and I think it's in the Confessions, where he says, hold on, I'm pulling it up for you. He says, I have been putting off this letter until now because I was afraid people would laugh at the way I write. So he wasn't very educated, because he hadn't had time to be educated, because he was, at that time, was a slave. And so he was kind of embarrassed and humble, but he was assured of God's love and grace in his life. And that was kind of what drove his ministry. So it's interesting to see this in the Confessions, of he's not trying to say, I've never sinned. He's trying to say, no, I have sinned. I have done stupid things, but God has confirmed my ministry there because it's about God and it's not about me. It's also interesting, something that not many people know, is that the other bit that we have written from him is an absolutely scathing letter where he condemns a slave trader, and he excommunicates him, this fellow named Corticus. And apparently Corticus, who is supposedly a baptized Christian and also a Roman citizen, went and both killed and then sold some of the new Christian converts in Ireland into slavery. And Patrick sends him this letter trying to kind of, you know, tell him this is a bad thing and please release the people that you haven't killed. And he sends back and he mocks them. So then Patrick sends back this absolutely scathingly angry, livid, but also at the same time weirdly loving. Like, he also is saying, you know, I hope it's not too late for you. I hope you can repent because you've done a terrible thing. But it's this really interesting condemnation of, to a certain extent, slavery. And there's this kind of almost funny part, although he's completely serious, where, so Patrick was a Roman citizen as well. And so he's appealing to him, to Corticus, as a Roman citizen, but he says, I can't appeal to you as a Roman citizen. And then he quotes and he says, I will not appeal to you as a fellow citizen of Rome or as a fellow citizen of the church, but as a citizen of demons because of your evil works. And so it's this really, he's quite mad, and he is not going to let Corticus forget it. And he writes very eloquently to tell Corticus to let all of these Christians and these women and men go and to repent of the sin of putting people into slavery. So one thing people don't know about St. Patrick is that he was something of an abolitionist. So that is the story of St. Patrick. And St. Patrick is just one of my favorite historical figures. And fun fact, he was the first person I ever did a research paper on in middle school. So to draw out some of the history, kind of some of the legacies that St. Patrick left behind, of course we have the legacy that he kind of converted Ireland to Christianity. So we think of Ireland, maybe not as much now, but in its history and in its culture, still very shaped by this Celtic Christianity. And that was mostly due to Patrick, who was willing to go back to the place where he was enslaved and kidnapped to bring the love of God because he had so experienced it. Another thing that we have through Patrick is an emphasis on the Trinity. So I'm going to read you a little bit of this St. Patrick's breastplate, which was attributed to him in the Old Irish. So it's in kind of like you think of Old English, it's an old dialect. But I'm going to read you the English translation where he talks, it's called, you know, St. Patrick's breastplate, and it reads like this. I bind to myself today the strong virtue of the invocation of the Trinity. I believe the Trinity and the Unity, the Creator of the universe, I bind to myself today. The virtue of the incarnation of Christ with his baptism, the virtue of his crucifixion and his burial, the virtue of his resurrection and his ascension, the virtue of his coming and the judgment day. And then he goes on and on, and he goes through the rest of the persons of the Trinity. And when you think about this in the context of the rest of the church tradition, this is right in the middle of when we were having these huge debates over, you know, some of them had kind of been solved, but debates over the incarnation and the Trinity, and that was a strong emphasis of Patrick's. And we all know him for having given the example of the Trinity of the clover, that God is three and one. And people have criticized that example, but as a great little satiric video points out, he wasn't saying this is completely the truth. He was trying to help people who would never have any concept of the Trinity understand. But he had a high respect for the Trinity, and that was a real central part of his legacy and of his theology. And then a final legacy that he left behind is he had a love of nature, and he saw God as communicating through it, and that God revealed his glory and his beauty through a celebration of nature. So this is another section of the St. Patrick's breastplate, and I just wanted to read it to you because I think it's beautiful. I bind to myself today the power of heaven, the light of the sun, the brightness of the moon, the splendor of fire, the flashing of lightning, the swiftness of wind, the stability of earth, the compactness of rocks. And he goes on and he kind of says that God is revealed in all these things. I think my favorite is when he says the compactness of rocks. That's such a kind of funny way to imagine that, but is so true. The tightness, the smallness, that it's all kind of compact into this small, dense thing. So that is what St. Patrick is famous for. And he is someone whose life is just deeply shaped by knowing his own kind of smallness and his need, but also knowing God's great love and his ability to set us free, both from sin and from literal captors. And that was a legacy that Patrick carried on, and his passion for not allowing slavery and for setting people free and showing them the love and the glory and the beauty of God as displayed through all of creation. And that kind of emphasis on the beauty of creation has come through a lot in the way that Celtic Christianity has been expressed in various ways. And it all kind of stems back to St. Patrick. So that is your historical and theological look at St. Patrick. Now I'm going to give you three suggestions of how to celebrate today, this lovely Saturday. The first is to make some kind of Irish food. So for me, I'm going to be making soda bread. You can look up a recipe online. My favorite always includes having currants in it, but sometimes I put cranberries instead of currants in my soda bread. And remember to eat it quickly with a lot of butter and a lot of jam, because it will dry out after a day or two. The second thing another thing you could make if you want to do something Irish is like corned beef or cottage pie. There's many things. Look it up. The second is to listen to some Celtic and Irish music. Now, if you want to do this specifically, I made a little playlist actually years ago, but I still listen to it every St. Patrick's Day, called St. Patrick's Playlist, and it is on my public Spotify account. So if you look up Joy Clarkson on Spotify and then scroll through my playlist, pretty near the bottom is St. Patrick's Day Playlist. I think it's called a St. Patrick's Playlist. It has lots of my favorite Irish and then, if not Irish, Celtic tunes, which I think you would enjoy listening to. And then finally, I would suggest investing in some of the wonderful talent of Ireland by watching something. I would suggest watching The Book of Kells. Now, this is an animated film, but I love it as much as if I were a child as an adult. It is wondrous and pungent and lovely and brightly colored. And it's also about that kind of Celtic Christianity, which survived a lot of violence because, right, a few centuries after St. Patrick, we had the Viking conquests. And the Book of Kells is about, I'll talk more about this in some podcast, I'm sure, but it is about this illuminated manuscript that they made in the monasteries of the Gospels, this beautiful artistic rendering of the Gospels. And they made it in the midst of great warfare, where they had, I remember going to the exhibition of this in Trinity College in Ireland, and they said that the monastery where it was made was ransacked 17 times in 15 years. And like sometimes when they would have these, you know, attacks, they would kill a majority of the priests, but they carried on in this hope and this beauty and created this beautiful thing even in the midst of chaos. And that has always been something that's moved me and made me think, if the worst thing happens, will I still make beauty? Because the worst thing happened to them 17 times in 15 years. But the Book of Kells is not quite that drastic, but it is a look at the creation of that beautiful work, but through a child's eyes, and it's playful and beautiful and very, very Irish. So that's all I have for you today. And this was an impromptu podcast, but I wish you all well, and I hope that you all do something Irish. Let me pray this blessing for you, which is taken from the Celtic Daily Prayer, and I think is an adaptation of part of the St. Patrick breastplate. May the peace of Christ go with you, wherever he may send you. May he guide you through the wilderness, protect you through the storm. May he bring you home rejoicing at the wonders he has shown you. May he bring you home rejoicing once again unto my podcast. Blessings, you guys. I hope you have a great day.